Welcome to the Hope After Child Loss podcast, where we endeavor to offer stories of hope to grieving parents and siblings so that they might rediscover life filled with meaning, purpose, and hope. We invite you to come and join us. Hey guys, I'm your host, Greg Bufkin, and I wanted to welcome you today. Our guests are Rachel and her sister Jacqueline of Open Frame. It's an organization that these two guys co-founded just in the last few months, and I'm going to let Rachel from the start tell you guys a little bit more about Open Frame, and then we'll dive into their stories.
Well, hi, Greg. Thank you so much for having us. We're thrilled to be here, and what a privilege it is to talk about where we've come. Open Frame is an organization dedicated to helping families who have lost due to overdose reframe the grieving process so as to be able to really live and thrive post the loss. So we really are focused on cherishing our loved ones, connecting each other to form a community of people with a shared experience, and then sort of empowering the community around us too with information and understanding of what it's like this kind of loss, which is very specific and very, very unique compared to some other losses simply because of the traumatic nature of it. Often the lack of information, the shock value, the stigmas, the guilt that compound the grieving process. So we're just really, our desire is to be a place of comfort to those who have found themselves in a similar situation as we have. And it's really born out of a desire to create what we wish we had post this traumatic loss that we've experienced, which was in 2017. So Jacqueline, if you want to talk a little about the story.
Sure. Hi, Greg. Thanks again for having us.
Hey, thank you guys for being here.
Yeah, we're thrilled. So as Rachel mentioned, we had a traumatic loss in our family due to overdose. And what happened we lost our brother, who is our baby brother. Rachel and I are twins. He was 33 years old when he passed. His name was Justin. And we both got calls from our family, from our parents, that kind of in the middle of the night. I was living in Alaska at the time. He passed in Boston. So we had time zone differences. But we received calls that just shocked us and changed our life. That's the bottom line. We had no idea that he used drugs. We had no idea that he was involved in anything that could ever harm him in this way. And we did not understand what fentanyl was. And it was after a very long wait. We received an autopsy report and realized that it was, in fact, cocaine plus fentanyl that did, in fact, kill him. One night. It was February 5th that we found out. It was that morning. It was Super Bowl Sunday. So it's a very... A Super Bowl Sunday is a very auspicious day in our family. Oh. We just kind of hold our breaths, try to enjoy the game, but it's a little bit difficult to not think about that momentous occasion. At the time when we found out that he passed, I was pregnant with my third child. I was 36 weeks along. Those of you who have never been pregnant or don't know pregnancy terms, that means I was about 4 weeks off of delivery. And I remember thinking very distinctly when I heard, like, breathe deeply, like, I have to keep this baby safe. And then all the questions started. And, you know, Greg, as you know, when we have these traumatic losses, there are just oodles and oodles of questions. And for us, that shock, well, for me, that initial shock was, it was absolutely devastating. My mind could not wrap my brain around what I had just been told. So it took me a very, very, very long time, even that day. In fact, a friend who came over that day to sit with me for a while informed me later that it took me hours before I ever even told her what happened beyond the fact that he had passed away. I could not actually get the words out of my mouth.
That's such a shock to our systems that it almost leaves you feeling paralyzed in some respects. I know it did us when we lost Ryan, and I know Whitney's described it, our daughter Whitney's described it much in the same terms that you just did.
It's true. It's like that idea of paralyzing is exactly right. Like the world just stops all of a sudden.
Right.
It is a physical sort of, there are a lot of things that happen in those moments, aren't there? I remember distinctly looking out of my windows and seeing the sunshine on the snow and having this deep, deep gratitude for being alive that I had never had before, about 3 hours after hearing the news. And I remember thinking, this is crazy how such a deep, like I couldn't even understand what had just happened and what that meant. And I knew distinctly we were on a new path. My life had changed and I was on a new path. And in those moments, I also had a deep gratitude for just being alive and being able to then walk out whatever was coming for us, really.
Yeah, it's so strange in those initial moments where there's a flood of emotions that are incredibly difficult to try to process because we're never prepared for that phone call, right? And for stepping into something like that because, you know, 30 seconds before you got that phone call, life was going in one direction, on one trajectory, and in a second, the news that you guys received, just like we did 7 years ago, totally changed the trajectory of your lives going forward. There suddenly became a before and after, right?
That's accurately put, a before and an after.
To parallel what Jacqueline was sharing, I was actually living in Florida down this, about a half an hour away from my parents when we received the call. So I was also pregnant, but I was 6 months along. So I had 4 months to go and ended up delivering 4 months to the day of losing Justin. But I also had a similar panic where I needed to control my physical body. So it was to keep the baby moving along. But also I found that because we could go visit my parents, my first questions came out, what happened? We didn't actually know. My husband was the one that received the news from my mom, and he didn't actually know that it was a drug overdose at all. We just knew that he was gone, and we knew that his girlfriend at the time was not harmed. Those are the only facts that we had. So initially we thought, well, we've got to get over to our parents' house. We've got to go. And so I started packing a diaper bag for my one-year-old who was toddling around happy as can be, playing so sweetly in the sunshine, just having a great morning. I started packing and looking around for all the things, the book, the swimsuit, the huge diaper bag of things. And the whole time I was packing, my husband was following me around saying, Rachel, my mom is coming over. Meaning my mom is going to come over to watch our son. We don't need the diaper bag. But I couldn't hear that. I kept looking and looking and panicking and just keeping, I was such in a rote, physical reaction just to get things together. And it really wasn't until my mother-in-law showed up at the front door and I saw her face that I realized I, in fact, don't need the diaper bag and that everything that had just been revealed is true. And I cried for the very first time. It all just kind of flooded out. And then it was a very, emotional ride over to my parents' house where they were, initially processing what had just happened.
Right. And I think a lot of people who haven't been where you guys are don't really understand that you, both of you, have referred to the physical impact. I think sometimes there's a tendency to think of grief more in terms of what we can see from the outside looking in, and that's the emotional impact, you know, the tears and crying and just a general state of disbelief. But I think there's a pretty serious misunderstanding of that physical impact and the mental impact as well. And I can certainly understand what you meant when you were talking about trying to pack that diaper bag. Mm-hmm. You were just simply going through the motions because you are literally in a state of shock. Mm-hmm. And your mind is, you're doing something that you know how to do, but your mind's 1,000 miles away. And it was not on that diaper bag. It was on the fact that you just lost your brother. Mm-hmm. And your mind doesn't even want to process this.
Yes. Yes. You know, we talked a lot about with Open Frame, we have the privilege of meeting with a group of women every other week that have also lost siblings to either overdose or suicide. And we get together and talk about the physical realities years later of this kind of loss, how it manifests itself in social anxiety in unexpected ways. Or for me, I even now will do something physical, start running. And sometimes I just start crying. It's an unlocking somewhere of emotion that has not yet been processed. It's hard to find the origin of it or understand it. It's just simply that physical emoting from, you know, the large and drastic impact from so many years ago.
Right. And that was, what, 5 years ago, right?
In 2017. So, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. How about you, Jacqueline? Do you have similar experiences 5 years later?
I have, actually. I think initially, so a little bit more of our story. We lost my brother and I flew to Florida. I had to get permission from my OBGYN to do that because I was so far along in my pregnancy. But I did go. We had the funeral. I came back. And then 4 weeks after that, I delivered my daughter after arriving. So I guess I was 6 weeks away from delivery when he passed.
Okay.
And then after that, we sold my house and then I moved. So I had two boys, ages 4 and 2, and then a newborn baby. And we moved from Alaska to Florida, then up to Michigan. It was an intense period of transition for us.
Wow. That's a lot of change.
It's a lot of change really fast. We knew those changes were coming. What I didn't anticipate was also then the grief. So what happened, I think, when I got to Florida, that was a bit of a holding ground for us before we moved up to Michigan.
Well, it's great because Jacqueline arrived the day I brought my little guy home from the hospital.
Right.
So we had
perfect timing.
Perfect timing. Our babies are 2.5 months apart. Mm-hmm. She was there right for, you know, bringing mm-hmm. him home. And so there was this intense joy of these new beautiful babies in the face of the intense emptiness and loss and mm-hmm. all the questions, the, you know, loose ends that we were trying to tie up.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Since you guys touched on that, let's talk about that just for a moment. And then you guys can take it wherever you'd like. But this whole concept of joy in the midst of grief, I think that's a hard concept for a lot of people to wrap their minds around, particularly if they're in a very fresh season of grieving, because it mm-hmm. hits you so hard and it leaves you feeling like you've been hit by a bus. Mm-hmm. And if somebody were to tell you that you're going to be okay, you'll even have joy again. I'm not sure how well our minds are able to really comprehend that. And I think we just cannot even imagine that concept. So just talk a little bit more about that and what that mm-hmm. was like in those moments. How do you process mm-hmm. that? Your young moms, your wives, you've got family responsibilities, and yet you're having to struggle. You're struggling with the grief, and mm-hmm. then you've got joy right in the middle of it. What does that look like?
That's a great question.
I'll let you answer, Jacqueline. I'm just going to say, I think it's messy. It's just messy. Okay. It's a big explosion of all sorts of emotion and extreme in every way. Jacqueline, go ahead. What were you going to say?
Yeah. So I came back and then I was looking down. I was having these weekly OBGYN appointments just to check on the baby after I got home, and was about to deliver a baby, which, you know, if anyone's ever done that, it's a very, talk about a full mind body experience. You know, you need to be very present and aware and know what you're doing and be ready to have some grit because, you know, it's not painless. And I was looking at that, knowing that was coming for me, having had it done twice, done it twice, and thinking, I don't actually know if I'm going to be able to do this. I literally, for the first time in my life, my husband would say, you know, we're Italian, we're 50% Italian, we can be dramatic at times. but I would say things like that. I just don't know if I could do this. But I, with all sincerity, really didn't know how I was going to deliver a baby in the midst of such complete confusion and grief. I was completely destroyed. It felt like that physical piece that we're talking about felt like I had an amputation. Like I came back home to Alaska and I remember walking into church and thinking everyone's going to know something's wrong with me because I'm missing something now, like a huge, literally like a limb. And yet, you know, obviously yeah. you look perfectly fine, but I felt that displaced, like I had a huge amputation. And I now had to go deliver a baby. And I remember thinking, I don't know how. And through the grace of God and some people who honestly, truly prayed me through it, I didn't know at the time, but there was a group of mentor moms through a MOPS group that we have, MOPS, a preschool kids group, that had gotten together the night before I delivered and literally prayed me through it. It makes me teary to think that because I needed the strength to be able to do it. But once I remember thinking, God, how did you do this? How did I, you know, if God is really in control of and lets all things pass through his hand, which I do believe, how is it that we just had such an incredible loss and now I'm called to do this incredibly physical thing that I don't actually know if I can do it? And I did. And I remember holding her. It was a quiet moment. It was just me and her and then in the hospital room and just weeping over the incredible joy and the blessing that came in that moment too. It was like the exact extreme swing. And I thought, I am holding these two things. I'm weeping over my brother and I'm weeping over how beautiful this is at the exact same time. And I don't know. I remember thinking this is a very holy moment for me in my life, because I don't know if I will ever hold two things that are so incredibly deep and human at the same time. And it gave me hope or kind of maybe an understanding going forward. Like I ended up experiencing panic attacks, which I didn't understand at the time that that's what they were. For me, it came as a sense of like free falling, like out of nowhere. I would be like in the grocery store and then all of a sudden I feel like I fell off a cliff. So I had some physical things that happened over the next few months as I was trying to figure out where the grocery store was to get my kids milk, you know, all those little things that you, the things you do when you move. But, I was so grateful for that juxtaposition of like holding this newborn life in the middle of this grief, because it is messy. Rachel said it's messy. But that is truly how life goes. Like, it is okay. I think that's maybe part of what Open Frame is about too. The only way to live going forward is to allow that joy and those laughs to come when they do, because they will eventually. Like, sometimes you know, it's kind of surprise yourself, you're laughing at something. You know, and that's a beautiful thing. Like yeah. these things are meant to go hand in hand. And sometimes one outweighs the other greatly. But, you know, eventually we find a little bit more of a medium. And I think we're meant to live like that. I don't know with these kinds of losses. And Greg, I know this is true for Rachel, if I can speak for you, but I'm sure, Greg, you could speak to this. Like these losses never go away. They're so traumatic and they're so deep. I don't think this is the kind of thing that one day I'll wake up and think, oh, it's fine and I understand it. You know, some days I still get those deep, that deep sense of grief still, you know, and I think it does then also line up with this intense joy.
Yeah. I think what you guys have expressed is represents the stories of so many people. I mean, you guys have a unique story, but what you're processing and what you're experiencing and the journey that you're on represents so many people just like the two of y'all. I know it represents mm-hmm. our daughter, mm-hmm. Whitney, and the journey that she's been on. And I'm so thankful for what you guys are doing through Open Frame, because we all know that surviving siblings are known as the forgotten mourners. And there are a lot of reasons for that, but primarily because when parents lose a child, the parents are the ones who tend to get most of the attention. They're the ones that, if you're part of a church, the meals start coming in and people who are parents can't even begin to imagine what you're going through. And a lot of times I think it's the brothers and sisters are the ones who kind of get left out of that process, but they're grieving a very unique grief as well. And I think what you guys are doing is so important because it's bringing attention to that. So let's talk a little bit more. Go ahead.
Oh, no, I was going to say, so to that point, right after Justin's funeral, which we had decided to open the casket only for family because of the pregnancies and the shock value in order to keep everybody as healthy as possible. We closed that chapter. We said our goodbyes and we walked out, and it was a Sunday, the funeral. Monday, our parents' house closed here in our hometown in Naples. So I don't know what their plan was between the house they were building and the house they sold. I don't know where they were planning on going, but they ended up moving in with my family. So they actually moved into the nursery for the unborn baby, which was interesting because we put a physical tangible signal and sign as to where we were. Everything was just on hold in terms of preparing and moving forward. Everyone was just where we were. And having my parents in my home for three and a half months was really an interesting experience because the cards and the letters were flooding in for them. Most of them made it to my house. Quite a few of them didn't because people didn't know where to find them, which was also hard to connect to our hometown where we grew up in New York. But, you know, watching as a daughter, watching and caring for my parents in my house, trying to keep the one-year-old and the baby that is developing all going, it was really evident that and there was grace in it to not focus on my own journey. It was very much about keeping everybody and everything going. And I think a lot of, sons, daughters, and then siblings feel the same way. It's sort of, we just take up the mantle and we make sure that everybody is doing well. There is so much grace in that, and there is the ability to do it. But as years later, where I feel like we start to uncover those layers of what that actually means. If somebody, let me say this too, if somebody were to send me something today in honor of my brother, I would assume they had the wrong address and I would immediately take it to my parents. I expect absolutely nothing to come my way, but I would absolutely anticipate it for them. And that's just sort of the strange order of it, because we as siblings do kind of hold our, you know, the lives of our siblings so close. We're forging our own legacies as we are holding the memories close. And everything in our families is informed by the process of losing our sibling. And the things we do with our siblings are evident in our children's lives. So it's very interesting. I feel like if you really want to know who Justin was, in some ways, you look at Jacqueline's family, you look at my family, because you'll see him not only in our kids and in us, but you'll see him in the ways we're functioning.
Absolutely. Yeah, I would agree with that. I think you would see that in our family today as well. And how about you, Jacqueline?
I think that's absolutely true. I mean, it is, you know, I got back to Alaska after my brother passed, as I mentioned, and I had a really lovely community and people were around, but understanding how devastating that was a bit impossible, because, you know, and if I had been a parent who lost a child, that would have a different kind of weight placed on it. I think it is interesting. You know, I think we are considered kind of the forgotten mourners, and it has been incredible. You know, your daughter, Whitney, we've mentioned Whitney. Whitney is in one of our groups where we meet with her and some other women every other week. And it has been incredible to, I think that this can speak to the healing power of community, and just literally incredible to meet via Zoom, because we're in five different states, the women in this group. So we definitely can't do it physically, but yet, although there are plans for a retreat, hopefully, at some point.
Thank the Lord for technology.
I know, it's the truth. But it's incredible to be able to talk with people and just understand some of the similar, you know, back to that physical piece of it. You know, one common thread in our group, in that particular group, is the, like, just general anxiety levels that can creep up in funny places, even years later, like those social, a little bit of social anxiety here, or a little bit of a panic attack there. And sometimes we don't really know why, but I think the understanding in anyone who's experienced a traumatic and sudden death, like we all have, can relate to the fact that we now understand in a real way that the other shoe can drop, that things can happen. And so there can create kind of an underlying concern, like what's next, or like a generalized anxiety around like the state of things, knowing that life is very precious and can be taken in a minute. And for us too, I think we didn't know about my brother's drug use. Oh, go ahead, Greg.
No, that's okay. You go ahead and I'll jump back in.
Okay. We didn't know about my brother's drug use. So, and that was by his choice. I'm pretty sure it was his choice. He kept it from us it was his choice. He kept it from us very actively. There were people in his life that knew, we didn't. So there's this in terms of anxiety, when we meet people or are in relationships with people, sometimes I think, do I really know you? I thought I really knew him. I thought I really knew what was going on, and I didn't. What didn't I see? What don't I see? And sometimes that can translate too to other relationships.
I know for exactly what Jacqueline's saying, I think we all have in our group have experienced a sense of going to a social gathering with a group of acquaintances, people that we know well enough to socialize with, but don't actually have any kind of real deep connection. And those exact social situations can throw a game, because it's a sense of being super vulnerable in a situation where we're not sure is particularly safe. And for no other reason except that the trauma happened. And now, because of all the guilt, the shame, the stigmas that are attached to drug use, overdose, the judgments that do come as a result, there's a sense of being on guard and not quite relaxing in the same way. So, that's one thing we're working with at Open Frame, is to sort of combat the stigmas and the misinformation about families who have experienced this kind of loss. We are the face of this, an otherwise close-knit family who love each other very much, who knew about each other's lives, but had this one piece that exploded the whole thing. By the grace of God, we are all, our parents, Jacqueline and I, are all still very close, and we've given each other wide berth in terms of our grieving processes and how that looks, what it feels like, and how it bumps up against our own experiences together. But that's one thing that we hope to shed light on our organization through our blog, is two perspectives and one experience, so that you can see that the one event was perceived completely differently by two of us, both pregnant, both at the same age, both processing the same thing. And yet, at the end, we can still come together.
Yeah, absolutely. And it goes back to the fact that we do all grieve in very different ways. And of course, if you look at the literature, then, you know, sometimes people think that there's this step process of going through the different stages of grief. And it really doesn't work that way. I think we all certainly do experience most of those stages of grief, but it's not in consequential order. And the way that you guys walked through it was certainly different. The way that my wife and I and our daughter Whitney walked through it, even though the grief was all about our son Ryan, we all experienced the same loss, but we all processed it differently. And we all grieved that journey differently. And in some respects, we still do. But the important thing is, what I'm hearing from you guys is that you found a way to honor each other's grief and to walk through the journey together. I mean, that's so important when people experience such a traumatic loss, is to have people in place in your life already that are there for support. And I think it's Romans 12:15, if I'm not mistaken. I have been known to get to mix up chapter and verse, but it's one of the things that we talk about in the empty chair endeavor, is that we're told to celebrate with those who celebrate and to grieve with those who grieve. And that means getting involved. It means that it can be messy, because life is messy and grief is messy, but it's about being there for each other. And sometimes that means you have to step into it with somebody else and just help carry that burden. And sometimes just the fact that somebody else is there, it's not the words that they use necessarily, it's not what they do, it's just the fact that they step in so that you're not alone. You guys agree with that?
Absolutely.
Absolutely. I think
go ahead, Rachel.
I was just going to really quickly just I'm studying Job at the moment, and just looking at his life. You know, it's easy for people initially to sit in the grief, like the friends, for 7 days quietly supporting coming alongside and just, you know, acknowledging the loss. But I do think it's where the work is in our society. I think what we do after those 7 days, how do we appropriately come alongside people like us who are, I mean, a drug overdose does in Christianese assume an element of sin, right? I mean, it's there.
Right.
So how do we, as fellow believers, come along somebody and not judge the family or not have our righteous theology come out the wrong way? When we're comfortable with our faith and know who God is and lean into it, we can weather those stings from our fellow believers, because it just further isolates us in this already very, very isolating situation. But I really think that it's the people who have a new faith or a tenuous one after life blows up that we as Christians can do the most harm by saying the wrong thing at the wrong time about who God is. I mean, assuming nobody's being raised from the dead here. There is no miracle. There is nothing beautiful, and there's not even closure in an earthly realm, let alone a spiritual realm. More questions are left unanswered. So how do we absolutely say that God is, you know, the God who raised is from the dead and the God of miracles is still the God that is with you here? Is it a God of judgment or is it a God of mercy? And how does this work out? And I think in some part, that's part of what we're trying to do at Open Frame, is sort of just be the voice that God is a God of mercy, that he promises that he will comfort us as the mother comforts a child, that there is a deep knowing and a sovereignty that is a beautiful thing to uncover when you're sitting in that spot of what just happened here and who is God in this scenario. So I just think it's a very complicated but very worthy discussion to flesh out.
Absolutely. And I think it's so easy sometimes in Christian circles to categorize sin. We kind of put some sins in one box and other sins in another box. And if that's not one that that we've had a particularly difficult time dealing with in our own life, it's unfortunately all too easy to find yourself thinking about it and even responding, unfortunately, from a judgmental perspective, when from God's perspective, sin is sin. It's falling short. But as you said, God is a merciful God, and God loves us through the fact that we all screw up and we fall short. For some of us, it might be the drugs. For some of us, it might be the fact that we lie all too easily, or the fact that the list just goes on and on and on. But to your point, we need to love other people through whatever it is that they're going through, because we're told to grieve with, not judge, to grieve with, mm-hmm. and to love on that other person. Mm-hmm. And to add, it's like adding fuel to the fire sometimes when people, well-meaning, I think, in most cases, mm-hmm. want to give us a verse of scripture thinking that it will help. And a lot of times early on, it doesn't, because you're not ready for it. You can't really process it. Later on, maybe so. But it's just everything is too raw and tender at that point. The best thing that they can do is to show up and listen and, yes, pray for us, but to be there to support us through it.
Mm-hmm. That's true. And, you know, I think the beautiful thing, you know, we're talking about the joy, like holding joy and grief kind of in tandem earlier.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think part of the gift, if we want to look at it as a gift, which brings joy, of going through these horrible, horrific things that we would never choose to have gone through, is that we can see all the things that you were just talking about, both of you. You know, we can understand that sin is sin, and it is just a great equalizer. We're all a part of the big club of humanity. And right. What it means to actually be loved in spite of that, despite that. You know, we've experienced like the gift of having to go through something so terrible is that you see and experience like that grace and love of God. And then we can hopefully be more capable of giving that exact gift back and out.
Yeah. I couldn't agree more. I think it, when you go through something like that, I think it absolutely changes you. And I think it, if you step into the grief and as you begin to process it, it does help you see other people and what they're going through a different lens. And I think that's part of the good that God brings out of those very dire situations. You know, Romans 8:28, and God works all things together for good. Hard to see when it happens. Hard to see when you're in that fresh stage of those very dark emotions. But it does leave you forever changed, and I think it makes us more sensitive.
Yeah, I mean, we're able to walk into that deep, dark cave that is terrifying because we know that we can walk out again. And I think, you know, it's sort of the beauty that we know that God is working when your person is too far, because we're all living in the world and we're human bodies, when sickness ravages a body, we can all logically look at certain scenarios, say somebody's even just not even something traumatic like overdose loss or suicide, just somebody's body's ravaged stage 4 cancer. It might be the desire of the family to want to pray for complete healing. But there is something there's that logical piece of we live in the world. And what is so beautiful, I think, after living through something so horrific is to say, even though the physical body is in the stage and the situ, you know, the phase it is, God is there. There are beautiful miracles to be witnessed in the relationships. There are moments of clarity and grace and beauty that will far outweigh the physical reality that the end may be near for that person. And it would give us a greater view of who God is on such a level that would never be attained otherwise. So I think we have to culturally be okay with looking at pain and not wanting to remove it and say, okay, we can sit here and we can do this because Jesus.
Absolutely. So before we close, guys, what would you say, what would you say to somebody if they were sitting in front of you listening today, but they actually are? We're doing this remotely, but there is probably someone listening to us today who may be in a very fresh season of grief, and they are looking for something that they can grab a hold of that's going to offer them some hope that they desperately need right now. You guys both take just a minute, and if I put you on the spot, I apologize, but you guys have lived it out for the past 5 years. Just what would you say to that individual? And you guys could fight over who goes first.
Yep, I'll go first. This is Jacqueline. I would say that there's a quote by this great author called Edna Ferber, and she talks about how everything in this quote, I'm going to get it wrong because I don't have it in front of me, but the idea is that life is made up of good and bad, and it's all life. It's all velvet. And I think that's the truth. Like, there is something about going through these horrific things, which seem like they're impossible, that give you, in the end, a deeper and bigger life. And it's impossible to understand that, but this is really, you know, to the point of accepting pain. Like, pain is part of life, loss is part of life. So really, in a way, instead of I think it may even be a reframing, like, oh, what am I going to do? How am I going to do this? Which clearly I've asked those questions. I wish in those moments I think I did get to a point where I said, you know what? I'm lucky I get to go through this. I'm lucky I get to live life to this extent. Like, we hurt more because we love more. And when we lose big, we just gain a bigger understanding of how big life can really be and how big God can really be. And it is actually a blessing in its own right to just be able to hold something that is so big in life. Like, we just want the big good moments. We want the big weddings, and we want the babies, and we want, you know, all those things that give us joy on the front end. But the opposite side is that, like, part of actually living a real life is living things like this. And so to have the perspective that this is actually going to get me to a place where I am a deeper person, a more sensitive person, a more loving person, and I'm going to get to a point, you know, where I can then give more of that out and really understand life is its own gift.
That is so beautifully said. Rachel, is there anything you'd like to add?
I don't know. I mean, you really said it. Another way of saying the same thing is there's the idea that, you know, a day that is fully lived in life encompasses both laughter and tears. And there is something to be said that we really only allow ourselves the emotional bandwidth to go to extremes when you're pushed to extremes. And so lying your head on the pillow at night after a day of intense grief, after just having kissed your loved one goodnight, what a gift that is in the human experience. To say, I did it all today. I loved deeply. I mourned in a way that was respectful to myself and my family. And I know now that the fabric of life is in something that is really unattainable on its very own. We wouldn't all get to a richer point without being coaxed or pushed. So I don't know, to laugh and to cry in a day. You know, it's a beautiful thing.
Well, that too is very beautifully said. And I thank you guys so much for sharing from your heart today. This is sometimes can be very difficult to talk about, but I'm very thankful for what you guys are doing with Open Frame. And, you know, you guys said a few minutes ago, you were talking about the groups that that now are meeting online through Zoom. If somebody who's listening today thinks that they might possibly want to become a part of one of those groups, can you guys tell them what they need to do to make that happen?
Sure. Our website is www.openframe.us. And on that website, there is a link that you can click and then communicate with us about getting involved in a group. We have some virtual groups and we also have some in-person groups. So it depends on location, obviously, and also you kind of what you're looking for, demographic, you know, kind of all sorts of things. So we'll try to find you the right group. And we would love to do that. We would absolutely love to do that. It's a healing thing. And hopefully you kind of get an understanding after listening to this podcast of what we're going after, just cherishing our loved ones, despite how they were lost, communicating and connecting with others so that we can find joy and hope and life, real life after this kind of loss.
It would be a privilege to hold your story too, if you find the courage. If somebody's listening and not sure if he or she's ready to reach out, we will tenderly hold what you share with great respect, and it's a privilege. It would be a privilege to walk alongside you. So feel free to take a chance, because we will guard what you have to say with the same fervor that we do this entire organization, which is with tenderness and compassion. Our email is openframe.us@gmail.com, just to make it simple. And yeah, absolutely. We'd love to connect in any way possible.
Thank you, Greg.
Thank you so much, Greg.
Thank you guys so much for being our guests today. I'm sure a lot of people's lives are going to be touched by your stories. If you would like to get in touch with Rachel and Jacqueline, feel free to email them at openframe.us@gmail.com. And if you'd like to learn more about their organization, Open Frame, please check out their website at www.openframe.us. If you find our podcast meaningful, we invite you to follow us so that you can automatically receive the latest episodes. Also, we'd like to invite you to contact us and talk with us about sharing your story on a future episode, because every story is important and matters to God. Please reach out via email at hope@emptychairendeavor.com. That's hope@emptychairendeavor.com. And as always, thank you so much for listening.